G'day and welcome to Lethal Mullet, episode number 213, folks, looking at Ninja 3, The Domination. This is a film which was definitely different in the canon ninja film line back in the 1980s. It was released in September 14, 1984, and one of the many canon films directed by the famous and amazing director Sam Furstenberg. You know, this is a director that gave us not only these ninja films, but also later on down the line, the great Dudikoff series of films, that is, of course, American Ninja. Now, a lot of these you can see right now on Prime. That is, of course, with the Amazon Prime app, Prime Video. And it's great because particularly here where I live, we have a home cinema now with a projector and everything. We can watch these films that we never got a chance to see on the big screen back in the day, mainly because we were so young at the time. but this is definitely a different one because it was trying to meld a couple of different ideas that Canon were doing at the time. Things like obviously bringing in dance and stuff like that into it too, with, of course, the lead character, Christy, played by Lucinda Dickey. Still starred Shoka Sugi, who is, of course, part of the trilogy of these ones. We've also got Jordan Bennett as Billy Second. We've also got Dale Ishimoto as Akuda. James Hong's in this is Miyashima. And David Chung played the Black Ninja at the start as well, which we'll go into. So that's what's up today on the show. And again, we've got two more ninja shows before we then descend into, of course, a series of films that I think are going to be a really interesting look. And from, you know, a star of those films, which we've talked about before, particularly with a Jeff Wincott film and a series of films called Martial Law. And of course, that is Cynthia Rothrock's series of films and still out there kicking butt, doing what she knows best, which is doing amazing martial artistry and just adventures all over the world. So a big shout out to Cynthia Rothrock, who is actually out here on the Gold Coast over in the past fortnight. So big shout out, and I tell you what, we'll definitely be looking at Chana O'Brien and some of the other great films she's done, not just in Hong Kong, where she got a real big start in cinema, but afterwards in when she got back to the United States after that. So that's what's coming up in the immediate future, folks. We've also got some special live episodes, which we'll be putting out sporadically. One on Mel Gibson's Payback, which we've talked about. Another one, I'm just going to be looking at Stargate as I do my rewatch of Stargate currently, only about three or four episodes in. And I've got something a little bit different for you guys to check out. So what we're going to be doing is not only doing those, but we're also going to be, while I do the rewatch, reading the basically the spin-offs that were done before SG-1 was a thing. So if you go back to 95, there was an author by the name of Bill McKay who was hired to basically do the sequels in book form. So we're going to go through and look at this sort of, I guess, alternate SG-1, if you like. But this was most likely some of the ideas that, well, who knows, it might have been, the idea of where things were going to go with Dean Devlin and Roland Emmerich with live-action sequels, which were, as of, like, I think the mid-2000s, still a thing, still going to happen, but at this stage, they're definitely not going to happen. SG-1 is something I rewatch pretty much annually, and, you know, Jack O'Neill is a character I've always liked, and it's definitely the antithesis of what Richard Dean Anderson played in MacGyver with, so Ricky D and the folks, so we'll be going through that. Also, another episode looking at Star Trek Picard Season 3, which will be an interesting watch. And we'll be looking at episode to episode with that one. So chuck those out there while we wait for more Making Treks. Now, if you want to follow this show and many others like it, make sure you check out, of course, Lethal Mullet Network on lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com. You can also find us on socials at The Lethal Mullet. And eventually on YouTube and TikTok will be more of a thing soon as well. So get out there, you know, just nice and slowly in our old age out here. I could do that. All right. So Canon films, obviously, is a huge thing in the VHS market days of the 1980s, and put out a slew of great films. The Ninja series of films were really what I think brought Canon, apart from Chuck Norris flicks, I guess, to my attention now here in Australia. You know, as a kid, I was always involved in martial arts at a young age. So I had a bit of a love for anything that had a storyline with that too. So it's interesting. You know, this was at a time too where horror was a big thing. You know, you had Nightmare on Elm Street, Freddy Krueger, Halloween films, all that sort of stuff. Very, very popular. So the movie we're about to talk about, the third of a trilogy, an anthology series, if you like, all about the ninja, really brings dance, horror, and ninja together. And that's what makes it, I guess, the most interesting thing about it too. Yeah. Critically, it's a bit of a mixed bag, but most of the Canon films are. So let's have a look at it. So there's a film directed by Sam Furstenberg, and it's his second of the ninja films that he did. He started on Revenge of the Ninja. And it's definitely a cult film, without a doubt. So it's about Christy Ryder, played by Lucinda Dickey. And she's a telephone line woman. And she's also on the side, does aerobics as well as an instructor. From here, at the start of the film, she's possessed by an evil ninja spirit. This fallen ninja by the name of Hanjuro. It's basically her coming to his aid. And he then is able to transfer spirit. The spirit then uses her basically as a conduit, if you like. And from here, he's able to enact revenge on the many police who attacked him and, of course, killed him, took his body. One of the police in it is Jordan Bennett's Billy Secord, who basically is infatuated with Christy straight away. And also, at the same time, can't get over the sort of fascination that obviously she has with, the Japanese culture itself. But also, she blacks out. So that's obviously when the ninja spirit comes through. From here, obviously, she's also, going through what is very, I think, paramount in a lot of the horror in the 1980s and probably still is to this day, is those sort of dreamlike sequences where she's, flooding between herself and the spirit of the ninja warrior. So from here, they have exorcist scenes as well, where basically they reveal that he cannot force the spirit out of Christy itself, but only another ninja can. And from here, enter Kasugi's character, Goro Yamada, who's a ninja hunting out the assassin itself and, of course, tries to, along the lines, to also bring it out. And so they enact a plan and, of course, the showdown between the ninjas happens. So this is a movie starring Shokasugi as Goro Yamada. It's definitely the last one that he did with Canon. I think with a show, he'd been kind of the first film, Enter the Ninja, he was the lead villain. And, it was a Hasegawa he played. And it was a good role. It was definitely one that was interesting and, that it was straight up. It was the typical ninja bad guy. But in the second one, Revenge of the Ninja, you get to play the lead. And so although still a ninja, it was not quite in the same ballpark. And in this one, he's definitely relegated towards the back. And I think, he's not a lead. He's not even the main bad guy in this either. So he's a hero. But then he certainly gets some good, fight scenes and stuff like that. But he's not the main character. So it's kind of weird, when you watch this. Really, it's Lucinda Dickey who's the lead in this. David Chung is the black ninja Hanjuro as well. So, yeah, it's not quite the same. So you can kind of see, and if you read some of the details on the production through Stephen Lambert's biography, which is a great read, by the way, amazing martial artist and stunt man, has worked on a lot of material over the years. Yeah, really interesting life, by the way, too. So it's a great read, his book. And I think between that and, of course, Sam Furstenberg's book too, you get both of these on Amazon, by the way, folks. What I love about it is just not only the details of the production, but just, again, it's the setup, the stunts. I mean, there's some great stunt work at the start of the film too, particularly you know, the whole time when the police are sort of hunting down the ninja and stuff. But also the work itself, getting Lucinda to become, you know, a martial artist in the movie, and unbelievable. And she's quite good as the lead, is Christy in this too. It's very much that idea of bringing dance into it really worked. And she'd done, obviously, the two dance movies for Canon before this, called Breakin', if I remember right. So, yeah, there's definitely some great work that Lucinda had done on that too. So Breakin' 2, Electric Boogaloo was the other one. She's born and raised in Hutchinson, Kansas, and she began dancing from the age of four and her mother's studios too. So she's majored in dancing, competed as Miss Manhattan, Kansas State as well. From there, obviously, she worked with, you know, dance groups and stuff like that too. Got a scholarship and then was one of the lead dancers in Grease 2. And obviously worked in with, after that, on TV and Canon Films, Ninja Through the Domination, and, of course, Breakin' and Breakin' 2 as well. And did some horror movies. Yeah, so interesting sort of work too. And, yeah, I think in this film, she does a pretty damn decent job being the lead as well. Jordan Bennett plays Billy Secord. Yeah, can vaguely remember him in some other stuff as well. Maybe it was TV as well. I can't remember. But he's really good in this. You know, he's obviously kind of obviously in love with the lead. So you got that in common there too with being with her in a lot of the scenes, but also trying to find out what's happening to her as well. So he's a stage actor as well. He's had recurring roles on The Waltons, Too Close for Comfort, and Emergency as well. So there you go. Definitely probably seen him on TV, I'd say. James Hong playing Miyashima. I mean, what's to say about James Hong that hasn't been said already? One of the most prolific actors out there. He's done so much when it turns to you know, the films that I grew up with. It is, without a doubt, hands down, one of the most talented actors out there too. you know, when I was growing up, it was Blade Runner, Big Trouble in Little China. But, you know, it was a lot of the material that was out there was definitely stuff that that I've enjoyed over the years. And whether it was The Perfect Weapon, right up to even recently, he's done some amazing stuff. He's you know, a very young 94 years of age and doing an amazing job still to this day, you know, in film, TV. Obviously, Wayne's World 2 as well was in. And most recently in 2022, the epic Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. Truly amazing. So there you go. Fantastic actor, one of my faves. David Chung played, obviously, the Black Ninja Hanjuro. And he's done a lot of work. He's a Korean-American actor and worked on, I think, looking back, Repo Man's probably the first one, played the sheriff in that. Repo Man is a classic. We'll have to talk about that one day on Lethal. But he's also worked in Missing in Action, Out of Bounds, Walker. He also worked on Paradise Road. And he's also worked on Criminal Act as well, too. And sadly passed away in 2006. But in this, yeah, the smaller part that he has in this is the ninjas, you know, still great because he gets all those scenes, obviously, you know, setting up the spirit taking over Lucinda Dickey's character. Then we have Dale Ishimoto as Akuda. He's done quite a lot of work over the years too. Obviously in MASH, Superchick, Beach Red as well, back in the early days as well. And, you know, I think some of the other stuff he's done, Enter the Ninja, he played Komori. Yeah, you might remember him at the start of that film too. He was in Midway, Cannonball Run 2, Beverly Hills Ninja, I played character in that as well, and Come See the Paradise in 1990. So, yeah, lots of work, obviously, too. Now, the film itself, I think, you know, sets up what is, you know, again, a classic ninja tale, but also it's one that fits within the 1980s and definitely in that sort of zone of what it means to be, you know, a horror slash, you know, romantic story, if you like. The film was directed by, of course, Sam Furstenberg, written by James R. Silk, and produced by Yoram Globus, Menahem Golan, and David Womack. Hananya Beya was the cinematographer. Music was by Udi Harpaz and Misha Siegel. It was distributed worldwide by, of course, MGM, and production company was the Cannon Group. Now, the film was classic, the fact that, you know, you can get all this within 92 minutes of, you know, film. And, you know, it is a fantastic 92 minutes. It's smashed up together with some great fight scenes, some great music, and, of course, 1980s like you know it best. It was released September 14, 1984, and a budget of $2 million. It gained $7.6 million in box office. So for Cannon, this was a pretty damn big hit. You know, at a time where, you know, they kind of needed hits, which is great. Now, this came out in 84 along with Breakin' 2, which came out the same year. But 1 year later, we'd see, of course, Sam Furstenberg return with a different kind of ninja movie. So let's have a look at some Sam Furstenberg. Sam Furstenberg, well, otherwise known as Shmuelik Furstenberg, is an Israeli-American film actor and director, I should say. He's an Israeli-American director and known for, of course, mainly B-movies, but obviously the American Ninja series 1 and 2 being the main ones. And he really is an amazing you know, director when it comes down to just the, you know, the work that he's done, but also getting the performances that he does on such a budget too, you know, with the stunts and everything involved too. So just to riddle off some of the amazing stuff he's done, and varied, not just one style, which makes it interesting. So obviously he's done Revenge of the Ninja, Ninja 3, The Domination, Breakin' 2, Electric Boogaloo he did, American Ninja, and then Avenging Force, which we've covered here before as well, American Ninja 2, The Confrontation. Then jumping right up through the early 90s, he did Delta Force 3, The Killing Game, American Samurai 92, Cyborg Cop, and the sequel, Operation Delta Force in 97. And some of the other stuff he's done also is Quicksand in 2002, and he's currently in pre-production for The Last Kumite. Interesting. He was also a writer on For the Sake of the Dog, One More Chance, and Cyborg Cop 2 as well. But what I love about Furstenberg is that, you know, he's able to make these films, you know, look, I think, a lot bigger, more expansive than obviously sometimes they can be. And I think that's something across the board, you know, as a director, is a hell of a trait. You know, he's done an amazing job with that too. So with that, we're going to have a look at some of the other stuff when it comes down to it too. One of those being the trivia, some of the funny things that happen. So the arcade machine in Christie's apartment is the prototype for the game Bouncer by Entertainment Sciences. But due to financial difficulties, the game was never widely released. Interesting. So Kasugi, obviously we know he's a martial artist, karate being his predominant style. Kasugi is an actual So Shokasigi is an actual ninpo practitioner. He was also the technical advisor and the fight co-choreographer. Cut that out. Shokasugi is the actual technical advisor and fight co-choreographer on the movie. So he's an actual real ninpo practitioner. He starred in numerous of the 1980s ninja movies and appeared in each of the canon ninja series of films anthologies. Came up the idea for the character's eye patch himself in this as well. The eye patch he uses is the super from a katana across his eye, which is an interesting one. And it is very iconic in it too. This was the first of a five-picture deal for Lucinda Dickey, starting with Breakin, Breakin 2, Breakin 3 was planned but fell apart. And the other times was City of Gold, which was the Alan Quatermain films as well. It was shot in under 9 weeks, and Sam Furstenberg came up with the idea for the V8 juice in the love scene. During the filming, Lucinda Dickey and Jordan Bennett hung out a lot together off screen. They would go running around 5:30 every morning, daily, before the film began. A shot of a spinning head had to be cut out in order to avoid an X rating from the Motion Pictures Association. The monks at the temple were played by martial arts students. Long shots of the temple were done with a matte painting. Lucinda Dickey actually took lessons on climbing the telephone poles that her character, Crystal Ryder, does in the film to make it more authentic. This was the final entry in the Ninja trilogy, the first and second being Enter the Ninja and Revenge of the Ninja. According to Lucinda Dickey, the most evil she felt her character in the film was not the hot tub scene, because the two actresses were just terrified of her. The swords were made out of bamboo, rubber, or aluminium. The police station scenes were shot at an actual police station. Shokasugi frequently brought his sons Kane and Shane to the set during the shooting of the movie as well. So the Kujikiri are the ninja 9 levels of power. So this is how it works. They are 1, Rin, strength of mind and body. 2, Kyo, direction of energy. To, harmony with the universe. Sha, healing of self and others. Kai, premonition of danger. Jin, knowing the thoughts of others. Retsu, mastery of time and space. Zai, control of the elements of nature. 9, Zen, enlightenment. The scene where Billy, played by Jordan Bennett, crashes the sports car, the producers want him to stay in the car and do a total flip and roll. Bennett told him there's no way in hell he'd do that. what else is there? There is also, after Lucinda Dickey was cast as Chrissy, she had to pack almost overnight to get to the set to start filming in Phoenix, Arizona in 3 days. This was officially her first starring role, since this was filmed before Breakin', 84 in 1983 as well. Interesting. So it's the final film in the trilogy of the ninja, and different style ninja villains and others, and good ninjas in different uniforms using this and fighting techniques. In Enter the Ninja, Shokasugi played Hasegawa, was an evil black ninja, while Cole, played by Franco Nero, was an honorable white ninja. Hasegawa was a more traditional samurai, while Cole was an advanced student who respected the ninja code. And from there, Revenge of the Ninja, Braden, who's played by Arthur Roberts, stuntman Steve Lambert, is an evil American ninja using a Japanese silver devil mask dressed in sheer black. And Cho, played by Kasugi, wears a black suit but featuring the emblem of his family, Credo, over his heart, which is a swan in a circle. So again, you know, using symbolism and stuff like that too through this is an interesting one too. Where does the film fall? Well, in lines, I think, you know, out of the series, it's definitely 1, 2, and 3 is the way it sort of lines up as far as quality. You know, the first film, Enter the Ninja, is without a doubt the best of the trilogy. And I think Revenge of the Ninja just sort of heightened everything a little bit more and definitely gave Shokasugi a chance to show us what he could do as a lead. And the third one's just something completely different. You know, I wouldn't say it's any better or worse than the second film. It's certainly something that falls in there. It is a 3.5 out of 5 on the Hallenbach scale here on the Lethal Mullet podcast.